Reading from Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, text, nature of the enjoyer in consciousness, text number 18. Should we do Sanskrit together or no? Is it there? Oh, okay. Jyotisham apitaj jyotish. Jyotisham apitaj jyotish. Tamasa paramam, tamasa paramuchate, tamasa paramuchate, gyanam giyam gyana gyamyam, gyanam giyam gyana yoga gamyam, hridi sarvasya vishtitam, Hridi sarvasya vishtitam. Jyotisham apitaj jyotis. Tamasa paramuchate. Gyanam geyam gyana gamyam. Hridi sarvasya vishtitam. Jyotisham apitaj jyotis. Tamasa paramuchate, gyanam geyam gyana gamyam, hridi sarvasya vishtitam. Tamasa paramuchate. Gyanam geyam gyana gamyam hridi sarvasya vishtitam jyotisham apitaj jyotis tamasa paramuchate gyanam geyam gyana gamyam hridi sarvasya vishtitam. Jyotisham apita jyotis tamasa paramuchate gyanam geyam gyana gamyam hridi sarvasya vishtitam. Ladies, Jyotisham apita jyotis tamasa paramuchate gyanam geyam gyana gamyam hridi sarvasya vishtitam. Jyotisham. Oh, how are we going to do that? You do it in Slovenian. Okay, so Jyotisham. Api tat jyoti tamasah param uchate gyanam gyayam Gyanagamyam Hridi Sarvasya Vishtitam. Translation. He is the source of light in all luminous objects. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. He is knowledge, he is the object of knowledge, and he is the goal of knowledge. He is situated in everyone's heart. Purport. The Supersoul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the source of light in all luminous objects, like the sun, the moon, and the stars. In the Vedic literature, we find that in the spiritual kingdom, there is no need of sun or moon, because the effulgence of the Supreme Lord is there. In the material world, that Brahma-jyoti, the Lord's spiritual effulgence, is covered by the Mahatattva, the material elements. Therefore, in this material world, we require the assistance of sun, moon, electricity, etc. for light. But in the spiritual world, there is no need of such things. It is clearly stated in the Vedic literature that because of his luminous effulgence, everything is illuminated. It is clear, therefore, that his situation is not in the material world. He is situated in the spiritual world, which is far, far away in the spiritual sky. That is also confirmed in the Vedic literature. Aditya varnyam tamasa parasat svetasvatara upanishad 3.8. He is just like the sun, eternally luminous, but he is far, far beyond the darkness of this material world. His knowledge is transcendental. The Vedic literature confirms that Brahman is concentrated transcendental knowledge. To one who is anxious to be transferred to that spiritual world, knowledge is given by the Supreme Lord, who is situated in everyone's heart. One Vedic mantra from the Svetasvatara Upanishad 6.18 says, Tamha devyam atmabuddhi prakasham mumukshur vai sharanam aham papadye. One must surrender unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead if he at all wants liberation. As far as the goal of the ultimate knowledge is concerned, it is also confirmed in Vedic literature, tam eva viditvati mrityum iti. Only by knowing him can one surpass the boundary of birth and death. Again, Svetasvatara Upanishad 3.8. He is situated in everyone's heart as the Supreme Controller. The Supreme has legs and hands distributed everywhere, and this cannot be said of the individual soul. Therefore, that there are two knowers of the field of activity, the individual soul and the supersoul, must be admitted. One's hands and legs are distributed locally, but Krishna's hands and legs are distributed everywhere. This is confirmed again in the Svetasvatara Upanishad 3.17, Sarvasya Prabhum Ishanam Sarvasya Sarana Brihat. That Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Supersoul, is the Prabhu or the Master of all living entities. Therefore, he is the ultimate shelter of all living entities. So there is no denying the fact that the Supreme Supersoul and the individual soul are always different. Om Ganatamana Dasha Gananjana Sulaka Sakshin Manitamina Tasmasya Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobisam Sapitamina Bhutale Swayam Upakadamayam Dadati Svapatantikam. How do we turn this off? In 1973, I had finished writing the thesis for my master's degree, and I wanted to dedicate it to Lord Krishna. And so I was looking through the appendix in the back to try to find some nice words to glorify Krishna. And I chose these words. I dedicated my master's thesis to Lord Sri Krishna, the knower of all and the object of all knowledge, taken directly from this verse. So it's nice to be reminded of that. So this chapter 13 is explaining about the supersoul. This is a very important aspect of understanding our reality. People do not know how this world is working. Maybe they get to understand karma a little bit, as we were explaining last time. But for the most part, most people don't even know that, and they simply go through their lives in complete ignorance. And, of course, they think that they are the doer of all activities. If they have an idea, they think it's their idea. If they have an inspiration, it's coming from, it's theirs, it's their creation. But here in this chapter of Bhagavad Gita, we're understanding that the inspiration and knowledge, both of these, are coming from the Supreme Lord, situated in the heart as the Supersoul. It's explained elsewhere that the Lord, He goes with the living entity through every birth and every species of life that they have. Oh, look, Bhagavad Gita. It's just so nice. The Supreme Lord travels with the living entity in every incarnation as a friend to remind the living being about their desire. And he'll remind us, previously you wanted, you had a desire for this. Go here, go there, and you will get the object of your desire. Of course, it doesn't say it exactly like that, but we have what we call a hunch, right? Or a feeling, or a inspiration to do or go or act in a particular way. And then we get the object of our desire. Even we may have forgotten that we had at one time desired such a thing, but the Lord, He reminds us, yes, you had that desire. So Krishna, He's called the self-sufficient philosopher who is awarding everyone's desire since time immemorial. Everything that we want, we will get. Everything. So therefore, the point of Bhagavad Gita is to get us around to desiring relationship with the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. And if we desire that, then we'll get that. So that's the process. The source of light in all luminous objects. Now this is interesting. I just read some new information about moonshine last week. Not the kind you drink, but the light from the moon. And I want to make this experiment. It is said that, you know, if you put something in the sunshine, rather a thermometer in the sunshine and a thermometer in the shade, the thermometer in the sunshine becomes more warm. If you do that with the moon, put one thermometer in the moonshine and one thermometer in the shade, the one in the moonshine becomes cooler. Wow. Huh? So I want to try that experiment myself and see. Because Prabhupada always talks about the cooling light of the moon, right? And that's exactly what it is, apparently. So this is very, and so in this way we understand that the light coming from the moon cannot be a reflection of the light from the sun. But the moon must have its own light, which has completely different characteristics and properties. So, again, here is saying that source of light in all luminous objects is Krishna. So, where there is nescience, there is darkness. Where there is Krishna, there is light. So these two things, with Krishna, darkness, forgetfulness. With Krishna, light and understanding and knowledge. He is beyond the darkness of matter and is unmanifested. So unmanifested means that He's not manifest in the manifest presence of the living beings in this world. That is, we don't see Him. He doesn't show Himself. So it's not that He's not present, but to say He's unmanifested means that He's not present before us. He's not manifest for us. He's beyond the darkness of matter. So matter in itself has no cognizant, is not cognizant, has no consciousness, and is therefore unconscious, and we could say without knowledge, and that way in the darkness. He is knowledge. So that's an interesting way to think of the Lord, that he is knowledge. Interesting. Earlier in this chapter, Krishna explains in texts 8 through 12 the different qualities, and he says, this is knowledge, and what is contrary to these is ignorance. Let's go back and look at that. Texts 8 to 12. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence, tolerance, simplicity, approaching a bona fide spiritual master. Cleanliness, steadiness, self-control, renunciation of the objects of sense gratification, absence of false ego, the perception of the evil of birth, death, old age, and disease, detachment, freedom from the entanglement with children, wife, home, and the rest, even-mindedness amidst pleasant and unpleasant events, constant and unalloyed devotion to me, aspiring to live in a solitary place, detachment from the general mass of people, accepting the importance of self-realization, and philosophical search for the absolute truth. All these I declare to be knowledge, and besides this, whatever there may be is ignorance. Now this definition of knowledge stands in stark contrast to what's taken to be knowledge in the modern day and at all modern universities or schools, all schools. The significant feature of these qualities that Krishna is saying is knowledge, these are all totally subjective experience. Humility, pridelessness, nonviolence. This is subjective experience. Modern university, modern schools, they teach nothing practically about subjective experience, and they all want to be experiential externally. That is, they want to see something with their eyes or construct something with their brain, or they want to be objective scholars in studying whatever subject they may be studying. So they're not interested in being subjective. They're trying to be objective. But Krishna is saying that that's actually ignorance. It's nescience. This is the other word that's used. Nescience, meaning if we take knee science, break that word down, not science, nescience. Science means to expand or to explore. So nescience, what is not knowledge is nescience. This means to not explore. Or to not explore what? To not explore oneself, one's inner being. So if knowledge is Krishna, then knowing all of these qualities, all of these aspects of knowledge, by getting to know one's, all of these in a subjective way, one actually comes to know Krishna. The more humble we become, prideless, nonviolent, tolerant, simple, serving the spiritual master, cleanliness, steadiness, and so on. As we develop these qualities, we develop knowledge, and if Krishna is knowledge, then we develop the ability to be able to see Krishna, to hear him, to be able to experience him in a very real and tangible way. He is the object of all knowledge. So, the same point there. By cultivating these qualities, one can achieve that object. Or let's say the object of developing these qualities is to get to know Krishna. And he is the goal of knowledge. And he is situated in everyone's heart. So, without understanding the presence of the Supersoul, how do people understand how this world is working? They can only speculate as to how it's going on. They think it's operating like some, or the deists, they say the universe is like a clock that God wound up, and it's running on its own mechanism. So they think it's going on like that. But it's actually, no, God is actually, the Supersoul, not only is he entered into the heart of all living beings, but he's entered into every atom. That was a very, very amazing thing for me to learn, because I was, like I said, had my master's degree, and so I was thinking of myself as some kind of scientist. I was studying, my area of studies was material science. And they get into physical chemistry and all that, you know, how do all the atoms work, and how do they join together and that kind of thing. And although the scientists, they can explain so much about how things work, or they can describe how they are going on, why they are going on like that, they have no idea. Why does an electron, whatever that is, circle around a proton, whatever that is? They don't know what it is, but they just give some arbitrary label or name to it to describe what they hypothesize. But the fact of the matter is, they don't know what those things are, nor do they actually know why they are working like that. And the answer is very simple. Given Bhagavad Gita, that these are Krishna's material energies, and they are working under his direction, and they are doing that, why? Because he is present within every atom, and he is directly directing his energies. So that was a very satisfying answer for me, as a young man, to hear that. And then I can understand, oh, that's why everything works as it does. That's why oxygen behaves like oxygen, or hydrogen behaves like hydrogen. I mean, that can explain everything in a very simple way without having to, you know, study and, you know, immerse your brain into all kinds of things and think that you know something when you actually don't. So the presence of the Lord, it's his energy, it's his creation, it's his show. He's putting on the whole show for the satisfaction of all the living beings who want to enjoy this place somehow or other in all the different ways. Who is this fellow? Is he always here? Hello, are you coming to hear Bhagavad Gita class? Okay, why don't we stop there and discuss?
Regarding the moon.
Regarding
the moon.
Yeah.
It is also said that the plants they get the fruits they get stained because of the influence of the moon. So I was wondering, because I was searching for the lights for the tools and like that, and then they're making almost like factories with artificial lights and like that. So is it anywhere said that the moon gives the taste by directly giving light, or just by the influence, the water goes up?
Yeah. Well, I wrote to Prabhupada one letter. I don't know if I told you that when I was here last time. Maybe I spoke about the other part of my letter. But my temple president, when I asked him, how is Krishna present in all these, how is Prabhupada present in all these pictures when we might offer the food to him that that he can receive it. That was one part of the letter. And the other part I wrote, I was inquiring about making an experiment exactly on this point. That my idea was that we would prove the validity of Bhagavad Gita by making an experiment to show how the light of the moon influences the succulents and the taste of the fruits and vegetables. And the way I stated it was that in this way we can prove to the scientist the validity of Bhagavad Gita. Prabhupada, he focused on the idea of proving something to the scientists in his reply. He said, we are not interested in trying to convince the scientists of anything, because after all, if they choose to remain atheistic, what can we do? He said, but our main aim is to convince the innocent public that life comes from life and not from matter. Anyway, I thought it was a good subject for an experiment too. Maybe we should do that one also. Not to convince the scientists, but to convince anybody who would be convinced. Yeah. Anyway, go ahead. When the summer comes, you can do an uncontrolled experiment. Cover some fruits tree up at night, and so it gets no moonshine.
You plan many such experiments besides this one?
No. It was just because I came across that. Actually, I came across this because there's a big... I guess maybe a controversy or maybe even a movement. There's a big deal going on these days about the flat earth. Do you know about this? You heard about this? Huh?
I heard about
it. Yeah, so there's a lot of people who are somehow or other, they're coming, you know, they're making the experiments and trying to understand, is the earth flat or not? And so there's one video on YouTube, 200 reasons why the earth, to prove that the earth is flat. And one of the things in that was about the moonshine. Because they, of course, in saying that the earth is flat, they have to come up with a cosmology to explain these things. And the moon and the sun and so on. And, so that was one of the things that was mentioned, was that the moon, the light of the moon is very different from the light of the sun. And so therefore the moon, it cannot, should not, or may not be, I don't know how they say it, a sphere that is circumambulating the earth once every day, and that the moon is reflecting the light of the sun. So they were saying that the light of the moon is very different, therefore that part of the cosmology cannot be correct. So.
You have some thoughts about flat?
About the flat earth?
Yes.
Well, I was in Sochi 2 weeks ago, and I was looking at the sea, the horizon, right? So when you look straight out from sea level, you can see about 2.5 miles. But when you look to the right or left, if the horizon is almost 180 degrees, you can see almost 20 miles one way and 20 miles the other way. And in the course of that 40 miles, there should be some difference. Anyway, I was looking at it. I wasn't really getting carried away with it, but it's interesting. They give some very compelling, convincing arguments. For example, if you stand in one place, there's certain places around the earth that if you look over the sea, you can see some city or some island or something at some distance away. Whereas if the earth was curved, you should not be able to see those things. Well, that's very convincing. That's my question also. You know, how those things are going on, if they're going on. Of course, to say that there's a flat earth immediately challenges everything that NASA, American Space Program, is doing. So these people, they have also begun to look into that. They take all the pictures of NASA has of the earth and analyze them in different ways. And they can show that many of them are simply photoshopped, CGI, you know. And, you know, before in the 60s, when they showed the earth rising and so on, it was a simple thing to paste the earth, you know, picture of the earth in a black space. Well, of course, then the question arises, well, why were there no stars visible in the sky? If the earth, if the moon doesn't have an atmosphere, the stars should have been very bright and not twinkling, but there was no stars. And they analyze this and they find that, yes, it was pasted in there. The earth was pasted in. So then, of course, that raises the question, well, if they actually did leave the earth's atmosphere, then why did they make false, fake photos? So they go on and on and on. You know, like I say, there's an amazing amount of videos on YouTube about the subject. It's very surprising. So.
But probably the other agencies like Russians and Chinese probably.
Well, that's, you know, I mean, it seems like everybody's in cahoots. You know, I mean, they're all going forward with the same game. And to me, when I carry it to its final conclusion, it's a paradigm shift. I think maybe Krishna arranged this because we're putting up the TOVP, right? With the Bhagavatam, I don't know exactly, I haven't studied this. I don't know what the Bhagavatam presents as a flat earther. But it's a challenge. Which worldview do you take? You know, the creation worldview, or because if there's a flat earth, then, you know, all their ideas of, you know, how the Big Bang and all this evolution, the whole thing is just like chucked right out the window. And then you have to come up with an alternative worldview, which is, in my mind, is a huge opportunity for us, because people are going to be looking for some answers. And if we can come up with a definitive answer, not just from our modern day, but from our Shastra that's thousands of years old, it will give a lot of credence to that. So it will be interesting to see how it plays out. Yeah. The implications are very profound, huh? Because everybody, you know, from the time we're children, we go to school, there's a globe there, right? And we just take it as a matter of faith that it's a globe. And if you bring this up to people, I mean, even for devotees, we, you know, in fact, when the fifth canto came out, you know, the description of the earth, or the description of Bhumandala, there's four huge elephants that are stabilizing Bhumandala. And some devotees, they had a really hard time with that. So I just turned the page and I thought, I'll come back to that one later. I mean, it's pretty wild. It's more wild than a globe spinning in space. In either case, it's totally beyond our experience. You know, it's just like, it's one of those things that you accept on faith, you know, for whatever reason. But we accept the Bhagavatam on faith, so why not accept four big elephants stabilizing Bhumandala too? And of course there's Sheshanag, who's supporting the whole thing on his head, right? We don't even have to go that far. And what's he standing on? Quite beyond ordinary comprehension.
Is it mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita? Prabhupada also mentioned the golden age, which is now in front of us. The one of the characteristic or the scientific point of view that Paramatma will be a scientific fact.
Really? I don't remember that.
What?
Oh.
Yeah, the one of the symptoms.
Really?
Yeah, the existence of the soul or super soul is going to be the scientific fact. I cannot recall where it is, but
how are they going to get there? Now, it's interesting. I also came across something the other day about Curlian photography. You know Curlian photography, where you can make a photograph of somebody's aura. And apparently they've developed the process to do this in real time with using a computer, so that instead of having to expose and develop film, you can take a photograph of something and then... And so there's one scientist in Russia, in St. Petersburg, who's very famous for working with this. And he was experimenting with people who are dying and trying to capture an image of them leaving the body. Well, what they saw was how the life energy leaves the body in different places at different time. And you can understand so you can see that part. So maybe if that gets developed further, they'll be able to take a snapshot of Super Soul. Hey, Mo, hey! We knew you were there.
I was contemplating on this fact, this information, because in the Gita is mentioned that the famous shloka of the second chapter, amazing shloka, I think, 30 verse from the second chapter. You can understand soul by any means, you know. Only by the means of the Vedas. So one of the perspectives on this could be that the scientific world will accept Vedas as a one of five proof. I mean, not only from the point of experiment, but also as a solid. What do you believe?
Some scientists will. Some scientists, like... Who was I seeing? There's one scientist who's fairly well known. I'm sorry, I can't remember his name. Living fellow who's alive now. And he does good scientists. He's very well known. But he also accepts that the Vedic point of view. So we have, there are scientists like that. You know, Sataputo is one such scientist, and there are others who try to understand science from the Vedic perspective. So that will be possible. Now, the difference is that the super soul in the region of the heart is 8 inches big, not Anu. Yeah, pretty big.
What is the size in the heart of the mosquito? His palm?
Yeah, somebody will have to answer all these questions.
Or
okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.